Rusty Quill presents The Magnus Archives. Episode 102, Nesting Instinct.
John, I understand you're upset.
A month, Elias, and you did, what, nothing?
Look, I was doing everything in my power to locate you. Everyone was working on finding the ritual site.
You didn't tell them I'd been kidnapped, though, did you?
Well, it wouldn't have helped matters. Martin's research, at least, would have been sloppier.
And imagine what might have happened if your rescue had been slower.
Sarcasm isn't going to help, John.
The only thing here that isn't going to help is you. I am sick of relying on the kindness of things whose stated intention is to kill me.
I am sorry, John, that my powers have not yet reached the level of omniscience. And I am sorry that I have to spend so much time trying to help you develop your own faculties rather than explaining everything to you like a child. But you have a job to do, and I cannot fight your battles for you.
As far as I can tell, the only battles I've been fighting have been yours and Gertrude's.
I should have thought preventing the horrific transformation of our world is not solely my concern.
Fine. At least we now know you're of zero practical use here. So aside from sending me other people's statements, what can you actually do to help?
I have been trying to give you the information you need.
Sure, when you're not bashing its head in with a pipe.
Leitner was... I will admit I possibly overreacted to his sudden reemergence.
He could have helped.
You? No. To you, he offered nothing but the crutch of simple answers. If I hadn't stepped in, he could have significantly stunted your development, left you defenseless.
Yeah, I can't imagine what it must feel like to be defenseless.
I do regret... Gertrude's notes on the unknowing are lacking. I only shared the statements for a reason.
You didn't even know why you were sending them to me, did you? Just... what, a box of random files she labelled? You were hoping I could figure out the reason Gertrude chose them.
There is a possibility some of them were misfiled.
So what do we actually know?
John.
Don't you dare John me. If you want my help, I'm going to need that crutch.
Gertrude believed that the unknowing was going to take the form of a dance. It required a great deal of intact human skin to clothe what she referred to as the corpse de ballet, though I suspect that's just her sense of humour. There is also one, the danseuse étoile, that requires a costume of special power or distinction. Gertrude believed that Orsonov and his circus created a dancer specifically for this role.
I've met it. Calls itself Nicola.
There's also something else in the notes she calls the choir, but no real detail on that. As far as where it will happen...
It's a wax museum. Old. Mostly abandoned, I think. I don't know exactly where, but...
That still narrows it down significantly. I'll have the others start digging.
How do I stop it?
Gertrude seemed to think that once the dance begins, it's tied to its location. Sufficiently disrupting that might be enough to derail the ritual. She mentioned she had acquired something for this purpose, but she gave no detail as to exactly what that might be.
And you can't just see where she put it.
She got very good at hiding things from me.
How embarrassing for you. Is there anyone else who might know what it is, or where? Aside from Leitner or Gerard.
Sorry? Gerard Key?
Yes?
How did you... Who told you he was working with Gertrude?
No one. I read it in one of the statements.
I don't think you did.
You just
knew it.
Well, no, that's not
no, no, John, this is good. It's a promising development.
No, it's just deduction.
Is this the first time it's happened?
Look, Gerard's not really a lead. He's dead, isn't he?
Yes, but I believe he and Gertrude travelled together shortly before he passed away. Perhaps if we could retrace their steps, we might find something.
And by we, you of course mean...
I'll see if I can hunt down a few relevant statements.
What?
Melanie is on her way up here with a knife. Could you talk to her for me?
Sorry, what?
She's hoping that even if I see it coming, she'll still be able to overpower me. She's wrong, of course, but I'd be keen to avoid that sort of struggle.
She's trying to kill you?
Yes, again. Even more than the others, she has a visceral hatred of being trapped, regardless of how much freedom I afford her.
I don't...
Come in, Melanie.
Elias, hi, just brought... What are you doing here?
Put the knife down, Melanie.
Get out of my way.
I don't believe this isn't the way.
You haven't been here. You don't know.
I was kidnapped.
Oh, sorry.
I mean, yeah, Elias.
Seriously, you too. Has he got everyone fooled? If he dies, we die. It's not even a good lie.
Why would it not be true? If he's managed to bind us, why wouldn't he be able to do that?
John, look at me. There is only one way out of this, and it is through him.
Look, I get that you hate being here, Melanie, but do you really want to trade it for prison?
No, but the way I see it, the police seem really keen not to investigate crimes committed here.
That's actually fair.
Shut up! Melanie, please.
It's not just being stuck here, John. It's not just me. He's manipulating you. He's manipulating all of us.
I mean,
can you seriously not see that? He's pulling all the strings, and I don't think there's any other way to stop it. So get out
way. I'm sorry, Melanie, but we need him. We will find a way to deal with him, but not today. And not like this.
I am still here, you know.
And if you weren't, I assume you would be watching this conversation. So, Melanie, we can't do this. Not yet.
All right. We'll try it your way. But whatever your way actually is, you'd better figure it out fast. Because it is your fault that I'm here. Fix it, or get out of the way.
Thank you, John.
Shut up.
Statement of Francois Deschamps regarding the family and presumed marriage of Benoit Masson. Statement given June 4th, 2014. Audio recording by Jonathan Sims, head archivist of the Magnus Institute, London. Statement begins. Why do you need me to live it over again? To recount a story you know well enough already? You were there, at least for the parts worth discussing. You want me to tell you what happened before then? How I met Benoit? His character? How he became my friend? Truth be told, he was not my friend. He was simply a colleague, someone I might describe myself as well-disposed to, but probably not even that. It may seem dismissive to you, but in my experience there are two situations where one finds themselves working behind a bar when over the age of 40. The first is that you own the establishment yourself, what the English call a publican, and see no reason to hire others to perform duties you are quite capable of yourself. The second is when a profound failure has brought you to the middle of your life with no wealth, no prospects, and no skills that could be applied in more lucrative avenues. Suffice it to say that Benoit Masson did not own Le Papillon Blanc. It was not one of the most fashionable spots in Toulouse, sitting just on the edge of where the tourist-facing centre meets the firmly residential, and never quite settling on either side. It billed itself as a cafe in the day, but most of its business was after dark, when all pretense was dropped and it became simply a comparatively cheap place to drink. I worked the bar there with Benoit and a few others, and had done for a couple of years since I left school. Of all the others who worked Le Papillon alongside me, I would probably have said that Benoit was the one who interested me the least. There was an air of sadness about him, a melancholy that I found unsurprising, given the position he had found himself in, but distasteful nonetheless. My own life has certainly had its hardships, and I cannot help but detest those who indulge in self-pity. Though, having seen his fate, perhaps some pity was earned. Benoit was, as far as I could tell, all alone in the world, and rather unhappy about the fact. It was rare that the topic of parents or family would be raised or discussed without his appearing, as if from nowhere, to quietly volunteer the fact that his parents were dead, or his lack of siblings, or whatever it might have been. Whatever familial bond was the topic of conversation, Benoit Masson did not have it, and expected, no, demanded, that you pity him for the fact. It will not surprise you to learn that he wore no wedding ring, that when a young couple would enter the café to pass their time in wine and affection, he would simply stare at them, his face a mask of ill-concealed envy. I am deeply grateful it was rare that we had children in Le Papillon, as the one time they came in while he was on shift, he vanished for almost 20 minutes, and when he returned, it was clear he'd been crying. All told, he was a pathetic, lonely man, desperate for any human connection. A connection I had no intention of offering him. Quite frankly, I believe I have spoken more words about Benoit Masson in the last 5 minutes than I did in all the many months we worked together. I wasn't even the one that noticed the changes in his behavior. That was our manager, Lucille. About 5 weeks ago, she offhandedly asked me if I knew of any alteration in Benoit's personal or home life. He had, so she told me, been significantly more cordial with her over the previous few days. He had been smiling, laughing, generally not acting like himself. I told her I didn't know and hadn't noticed, but the next shift I saw what she meant. It was as though a different man were wearing the skin of Benoit, a man who had always known the deep joys of life. I watched this new person go about their happy life for almost an entire night before I finally decided that I simply had to ask him what had happened. At first he appeared puzzled by my question, but when I told him how much happier he seemed, his smile grew wide. He leaned in close to me and looked around playfully as if pretending to check for eavesdroppers. "A woman," he said at last. "Francois, I am in love. And she loves me." And then, without warning, he grabbed me with both arms and pulled me into a short embrace which I was simply too stunned to resist. Up close, I could not help but notice the faintest of odors from his skin. It was a damp smell, like decaying wood. And it wasn't until I had a chance to shower and change my clothes after work that I finally managed to rid